surpass penetrating and perfect Dharma is rarely met with even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Good evening. Thank you all for being here tonight. Have you ever heard that saying that goes something like, when you get to the end, then you just turn around and go back to the beginning? Isn't that kind of what they say about painting the Golden Gate Bridge? That they paint it and they finally get to the end. And by the time they get to the end, it's time to go back and start it again. So I think maybe that's kind of my talk in the 10-second soundbite. I've been sort of, you know, kind of almost like agonizing about what should I talk about. You know, when you teach a course, it goes from A to Z, and to be up here occasionally and to not be as knowledgeable or as experienced as Catherine or Patrick or Edie, other people in our Sangha, then it's not like I have this set of books, you know, to lecture about. So I was, all these topics came up, and you know, I just kind of ran through them until one of them finally circled around a couple times. I came back to it, and that is, I wanted to talk tonight about beginner's mind. And has everybody here heard that phrase before? Zen mind, beginner's mind. It's the title of, I think this is the first collection of essays by Suzuki Roshi, published in 1970 and then reissued a couple of times after that. Since he was a Japanese national and had somewhat rough English, I gather, that, you know, there was some editing that went on, but a couple of his students got together and edited his talks into these very short essays, and the first essay is called Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. And, you know, in our practice, this phrase is, or this concept, the idea of beginner's mind is very important. And lately I've been thinking a lot about it. When he published, or when these set of essays were published in 1970, this book became kind of like the intro Bible to the Soto Zen lineage, so that when you go to Tassajara, or if you do some kind of practice / work type deal at City Center, they might ask you, if you say, what should I do to prepare? They might say, well, maybe you should take a look at that book. And I don't know that they tell you what exactly you should take from that book, but, you know, they say this would be a good primer for you to read before you come. And very often, you know, when we first come to practice, it's one of the first books that we're directed toward. It's kind of considered an introduction to Zen on the one hand, and also the essence of Zen in a number of very short essays. And one of the things that Suzuki Roshi writes in the first essay is, he says, in the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities, but in the expert's mind, there are few. And I think this is one of those statements that rings true for us, because we know that, well, I don't know, maybe we don't know this, but in my experience, the more I know about something, then there is less, what, mystery, less learning to occur. And sometimes for me that means less attention do I pay. So, for example, tonight, right before I came here, my dog took off after the neighbor's cat, which sparked an incident of complete and utter rage on my part. But we don't have to go into that. So I jumped in the car to come here, and this morning I took my Okesa and Zagu home. And of course I ran out of the house without it, because it's kind of come to be this familiar thing that just sits on the front kind of entry table in my house, and I pick it up on my way out. And, you know, if it were like the very first time I was coming here and I was bringing something that I thought that I would want or need, then I probably would not have forgot it. And of course, the moment at which I remember it, there's no time to go home. So anyway. Now elsewhere, he says, the goal of practice is to keep beginner's mind, to always have beginner's mind. And then he says, what is this beginner's mind? And he kind of presents it for us in a number of different ways. And one of the things he says is, this is wisdom seeking wisdom. I don't know exactly what that means. I think it has something to do with the feeling that we have when we come to practice, which is that there is something that draws us in, whether it be a concern about ourselves or our relationships, our troubles. Usually it's not about how happy we are. Like, oh, I'm excessively happy, I think I better go to Zen. But there is something in the inside that is, I think in another section, Dogen would call it like suchness, that we bring, that we understand that maybe there's something there, and we try it out. So I wanted to just talk a little bit about a couple of things that I have been thinking about with respect to beginner's mind. And one is, what does it mean to really say that Zen mind is beginner's mind? Because isn't practice as we know it, whether we sit regularly or occasionally, whether we do extended sits or not, we take classes or not, isn't practice supposed to, even if it moves in fits and starts and there are spaces and times that we're away, isn't it intended to steer us down the path of right action, right livelihood, right speech, and other right things? Don't we continually, in some sense, add to the karma bank, if there is such a thing, with our practice? And So I'll tell you just that I really don't know, but I think there's a short answer and there's a long answer to this. And I think the short answer is yes, and the long answer is no. Let me just tell you why I think there is a short answer that's yes, for me anyway. And that is that in my own experience, there is a kind of accumulation of practice. That's what I like to call it. It's kind of my own Marxist roots from college and graduate school, you know, the accumulation of capital. So I do think there is this thing that's kind of like the accumulation of practice from kind of punching the Zazen clock on a somewhat regular basis that might just show up one day. And it might be very imperceptible. It might be that you, I don't know, these are very mundane examples, but you might not, scream at the car that cuts you off. You might take a step back from a situation that's volatile. You might feel your own kind of disengagement as a kind of, I don't care, or it's not that important. But there's a way in which the accumulation of practice can show up as a kind of neutralness to a situation. And that doesn't mean that one is deeply neutral inside, although that would be nice. But you might not be acting out or acting up in the way that most of us do at some point. All of us have our ways. In my own case, I my triggers typically are work. And for some reason, I've just had a really bad mouth at work. I just say things that, they're not crass, but they are very direct. And then I wonder if maybe that was the right thing to say. And so I might bring myself more to apologize directly and earnestly. And that's a little bit late for the accumulation of practice, but, you know, that's from kind of where I sit, better late than never, I suppose. And sometimes I actually, you know, stop myself from saying things and so on. I mean, I think probably most of us have had an experience like this. So let me just say something about the longer answer, because I think there, for me, there's a longer answer too. The no, that we don't simply add to the karma bank and eventually kind of step up to the window and make a nice withdrawal on our investments. Let's put this over here. And this no answer, I think, has to do with kind of the paradox of the Zen mind, beginner's mind proposition, which is that when we first come to practice, it's really, in some ways, it's effortless to have a beginner's mind because we really don't know what the heck we're doing. If you're careful, you're using your peripheral vision to follow people in the Zendo to see what they're doing. And hopefully you're not following someone like the Doshi or the Doan, because then, you know, you're sure to make a wrong move or to make a move that's out of sync with everyone else. And there's a lot to learn. There's a lot to learn about Zendo form, about ceremonies, about ourselves, about our relationships with Sangha members, with our teacher. And so we come, you know, just with this initial idea, and then it's like, I think it's very exciting once you feel like this is something that you want to learn more about. It's like having a new hobby or something like that, in which the very knowledge itself, the very experience itself is very, it's exquisite, it's seductive, it's promising. There's a lot to remember, a lot to soak in. And again, you know, since we're searching for something, we're looking for the possibilities that we might be able to deal differently or experience our life differently, and to ease some of our own or others' suffering, is, you know, all the more incentive for us to kind of stay in this big learning process. But as probably all of you know, when we stay in the practice, time passes, that beginner's mind begins to crawl away. We learn things about our bodies. Oh, if I sit this way, then I don't have that leg cramp. If I, you know, change by the third period to sit in Seiza rather than sitting cross-legged, then I probably won't have back pain. Or if I take an Advil, you know, whatever we do. We learn maybe where we hold the tension in our bodies. We learn more about our own emotional, affective reactions. I don't know, I'm thinking that everybody has like rage at some point, that kind of like unspeakable sputtering rage that you could, from whatever, something trivial, something major. And we bring that to kind of better understand ourselves. Am I the kind of person that has, that I'm quick to be angry? Am I burdened by grief and by sorrow? Am I lonely? Am I incapacitated by delusion? Am I overly focused, or do I become distracted by the material things of the world? And where do I go when I have no place else to go, literally or figuratively? There's so many ways we could distract ourselves. It's really phenomenal time to be living. And as we learn more about our bodies, our big selves, our small selves, our reactions, you know, the theory is that the accumulation of practice will allow you to do something about this, to maybe interrupt or intervene in your own process. And then there's the fact that we learn quite a lot more about Buddhism. We study texts, we go to classes, we come to lectures, we attend ceremonies, we start hanging around with Buddhists. And we become familiar with the texts, the chanting, the vows, the teachings, in a way in which they almost become, I don't know if Patrick will remember this, but he once said to me, it's in your blood. It becomes sort of at the cellular level. So even though you say, I don't remember what I'm supposed to do next, he once said to me, you just do it and it'll come. And I think I turned my back on him like, oh yeah, right. What if it doesn't? Could I still have a cheat sheet? And that, you know, kind of being part of Zen and Zen life and the life of the Zendo helps us to feel integrated and helps us probably to kind of maintain a certain level of commitment and attachment to practice. I think I've probably quoted David White before, who says all the true vows are the vows that we don't speak out loud. They're the silent vows. And the ones that we do speak out loud, those are the ones that we tend to break. And I was thinking the other night that when he says this, what he means by this is that all of the vows that with which we align inwardly or line up with our self and our Buddha nature, these in some ways are they have to have a moment of quiet and silence and recognition. And it might not be that we can't later speak them out loud, but the recognition is something between you and this self that we say doesn't exist. And when we recognize in ourself that place of grace or bodhicitta, that ease, that place that we know has the potential to go beyond, then that would be a kind of moment of recognizing what White is calling the true vows. But, you know, as I think about this, and I'm going to kind of go back and forth and contradict myself here, there's a little bit of a hazard in knowing things, whether it be about ourselves or about ceremonies, which is that we become accomplished and familiar with these things. And when we are accomplished and familiar with things, they become much more routine. And we don't have to think about them as much. You can rush out of the house without the little envelope with the okesa and the zagu in it, for example. We might become very good at chanting, at bowing just right. We memorize the chants, the sutras. We sit a lot. And we just kind of put the time in over the years. And before you know it, before you know it, it's 20 years and you've been practicing. I know Catherine sometimes says, I've been practicing a little while, 40 years. And the hazard, I think, is that the beginner's mind just creeps a little further away because we're filling ourselves with these various kinds of knowledges about Zendo ceremonies, about texts. And it's very hard, I think, to, once you've been practicing even a little while, to begin again to cultivate that beginner's mind. And that's kind of a question that I'd like to just raise, because I don't know the answer to this. And I really do want to know, because I remember how excited I was when I came to practice and how open-minded I was. And it's not that I don't feel excited or open-minded, but I myself don't quite have that beginner's mind in as visceral a way as I did years ago. And, you know, of course, we could blame society for emphasizing achievement, for being goal-oriented, for having us focus on objectives. What do we say? When we miss the mark of achievement, then we try to learn from our setbacks or our mistakes so that we might hit the mark the next time. But not hitting the mark, you know, for us, we kind of invert this. We say that's the gift. The mistakes are the places that we pay the most attention to, or we privilege in a way, because that helps us with our humanness. And as you know, our humanness is not always a very pretty or glorious process. It can be. But the gifts of mistakes reveal for us the things that we recognize and maybe want to change, but we're not so sure how to change. The clinging, the competition, the codependence. I don't know why they're all C's. The generousness. All of these kind of parts of us that coexist. You know, maybe it was about a week ago or 10 days ago in the morning here. During the morning service after Zazen, which is a short service, there's a little bit of bowing and chanting. And I laid out that zagu that I don't have with me tonight. I'm sorry, I'll try not to mention it again. But I laid out the zagu, and we did the confession and repentance chants, and we were doing these vows, and I just started to cry. And it just, like, it wasn't like I was impressed with myself. It wasn't that I was sad, or I wasn't aware of being sad. It wasn't like grief stored up from the previous day. It just kind of, I want to say it just kind of came up, and the tears rolled out, and they dripped down my face onto the zagu, and it just kind of continued like that through service. And I don't really know why. I could probably make up a story about it, which is what we typically like to do about these things, but it would just be a made up story, and I would just say you shouldn't believe me about the story, because it would just be some story that I'd want to say so that I could account for the past to explain the present. And it's it seems a lot simpler and more accurate to say, I just don't know. But there was a kind of earnestness about it. I mean, there was a kind of truth and alignment that sort of went from my, you know, what the Japanese call your hara, your gut, all the way up to my head. And it was kind of a relief. And right at that moment, I thought, oh, what a relief. I didn't even know I needed relief, but what a relief. And so I began to think about beginner's mind as this kind of total body relief thing. So the question I guess I wanted to raise tonight is, once you've been practicing for a while, how do you go back to beginner's mind? Like, you could just say, okay, I'm going to think about beginner's mind. Beginner's mind, beginner's mind, beginner's mind. I'm a beginner. I'm going to go back to a beginner. I don't really know as much as I think. And to me, I know for myself that never works with me, because even though my mind might be kind of trying to rehearse something for my body to listen to, I don't listen to it. And so, and maybe some of you have had this experience where your mind is telling you, be a good person. Don't yell at the dog. Don't yell at the cat. Don't yell at your child. Don't yell at your partner. Don't become frustrated with this or that. And boom, it's right there, just like the tears on my zagu. So I'll just tell you what works with me, or what I think works with me. And again, this is a story, so you probably shouldn't believe it, but I'll just tell you it because I have a few minutes to kind of tell you a little more of my story. And that is that whenever I kind of work verbally with myself, it's a lost cause. And but for me, what tends to work is to, this is going to sound a little bit odd, but to step forward by stepping back. And by stepping back, I mean becoming maybe figuratively smaller, to become quiet. To not have to say anything. Not necessarily to be angry or to kind of like leave in disgust, but just to become quiet, to just watch. I suppose it's like being a Zen anthropologist, you know, like you're just kind of in there to make the observation. step back might be a little bit too generous. Maybe stumble back would be a better way to put it. You know, since ordination in January, every single one of the people who I invited to come and witness this event, who are not part of our Zen community, said to me, "So, how's it going? What's different? Are you like, you have more responsibility, or are you doing more things, or can you marry people now?" You know, questions like that. And usually I say, unfortunately, nothing's changed. I'm pretty much the same person. I have my same old stuff and delusions. I do wear robes now, in the morning in particular. But I can get in and out of them amazingly fast. And I just am sort of step back to try to settle in. And then most people just kind of change the subject at that point. But some people will say, "Well, what do you mean, settle in? Are you just like in a waiting period?" And I usually say, "Well, I think it's probably something like that. I don't really know, but it feels right to just step back and wait." And it's a little bit like just starting over. Except that I know that for me it's really hard to go right back to that beginning, like the first time I came to the Zendo, or the first time I went to City Center or Tassajara. But that kind of settling in without expectations, there's a certain ease about that, which is really lovely. And it's a little bit paradoxical, because I suppose there's a part of me that feels like I should have more responsibility, or I'm expected to take on more responsibility. But I've been very happy to just come and sit. And, you know, it's kind of ironic, but I'm the one that asked to be ordained, and I'm very happy to have been ordained, but I don't now have a really clear sense of all that it means, except that there is some process of settling in. And for me, it's a kind of, as I say, I've been thinking a lot about beginner's mind and what that means to cultivate that always. Suzuki Roshi says, this is the secret of Zen practice, is to always have beginner's mind. And so to have that mind when you're not exactly a brand new beginner, I don't know, that's the big $64 million Zen question. Mm-hmm. And it's probably different for all of us. But I just wanted to tell you that for me, this is it's hard. It's hard. And I'm working at it. Thank you. Now, I would just love it if you would tell me how you think about this. Sally.
As of late, I've been doing something that's both verbal and stepping back, which is what we learned in our mindfulness class about in the moment, sort of saying, what is this? So I do this several times a day, particularly paying attention to sound. And as a result of that, I feel like I notice somewhere between 10 and 20 more things in that thing that I'm perceiving than I would have ordinarily.
So is it something that when that's a moment of friction or difficulty at which you that you say, what is this? Or is it, as a practice, any moment?
Any moment.
I see.
That, yeah.
I see.
Yeah. It doesn't really feel forced at all.
So you do kind of like an inventory of what is this? Is that right? Or?
Yeah, it's just usually with sound, any sound that sort of that I happen to notice. Mm-hmm. Instead of trying to think about what it is, I say, what is it? And it makes me step back where I don't try to disassociate. I don't try to make it a thing outside of me and me. Mm-hmm. Sort of like it's all it, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Just like hearing that makes me want to dissociate. Because that sounds very difficult to me. Thank you. Edie.
I'm getting a sense that you're asking a question. What is beginner's mind? Which is the noticing and asking of the question is the most important thing right now. Not to have the answer, but to ask the question. Mm. And notice what comes up when you ask that. Seems like it's the most important thing right now. And not having an answer, it's not so important, but asking the question is.
Mm. So can we roll back to the Shuso ceremony and can I ask you the question?
And what is the question? What is the inner sign? Is that
for you? Thank you.
Does that fit for you? Or?
I hadn't thought of that. I do like outcomes, but I maybe it's a good part of the paradox that at this moment I go back to the beginning. And just ask the question. Catherine.
You just said, reminds me that often we say that when you come to Zazen, kind of like when you come to yoga, you discover you have a body. But maybe it's equally true that when you come to Zazen, you discover you have a mind. Because I think we don't notice that we have a mind for a while. We don't notice what that is. When you asked the question in your talk, what came up for me was when I was in Japan in 1990 for a month training period. And the first, I cannot remember how many days now, the first period of that, everything was new. I was open to everything. I had no judgments about anything. I just was taking it in and taking it in and trying to keep up. And at a certain point, my discriminating mind clicked in. And I began having opinions and judgments. Mm-hmm. And that was such a drag because the openness was such a wonderful experience, not experiencing that mind that closes, that judges. So for me, beginner's mind is that, is the mind before it begins to pick and choose and judge. But prior to that would be just noticing you have a mind. That's trickier. Because that's the part that we don't notice. It's just so automatic. Now I'm irritated. Now I'm having a rage episode. Now I'm happy. Now nothing's happening. Oops, that's boring. Thich Nhat Hanh says someplace, to practice not thinking. And maybe that's akin to what Sally's doing. Mm. You know, what is this? Just kind of consciously not thinking. I haven't tried it, but I think about it, what that would be like. It strikes me as a pretty interesting practice.
So you know, sometimes I think that, you know, we think of the world we live in as such a busy world where people are, their schedules are full. They go from school to work to the gym to a class. And, you know, from a Zen practitioner point of view, that might be like filling up the space that could be spent just looking at the space. But there's a certain logic to being that busyness, which is that, you know, the mind is engaged, and like how you described being in Japan for the first month, things are new. We seek that out. I mean, maybe it's too exaggerated to say, you know, there's a general lust for a beginner's mind, but I think it is such a relief sometimes to have that.
The freshness of that.
Thank you. Patrick.
Well, I was, you know, thinking about morning service that, you know, we've all done it about 5,000 times. And you know, sometimes I can really pay attention to those 9 bows. And, you know, everyone's a little different and my balance is a little different. And if I don't pay attention to, you know, going down and coming up, you know, I'll stumble, and sometimes I stumble, and then I start thinking about doing it. So I can get really involved in those bows. And there's kind of a rhythmic quality that even if I'm not thinking so much about what I'm chanting, and especially when we're chanting in Japanese or Pali, where I'm not really sure what we're chanting anyway, there's just, you know, a rhythm to it that I like getting into. And then there's times that, you know, maybe this is what was happening with you in the services, that, you know, sometimes then I'm really aware of what I'm chanting. Mm-hmm. You know, that this is really central and this is really important and this is said so precisely and so carefully that, you know, I'm really moved. Of course, other times, you know, I'm just chanting and not paying so close attention, but it just takes a little shift to, you know, realize that this is really grave, this is really connecting me to, you know, all of the universe. So there's lots of ways to shift in that beginner's mind for me. Mm. And it's really subtle. It's not a big deal, and yet it's a big deal. You know, it's everything. So I thought about that in service that we do, you know, so routinely every morning.
Yeah.
We've all done it now, at least in the four digits for all of us.
Thank you for saying that. It actually, it's a wonderful point that we, it's something that is as ordinary as doing the bows and the chants, that one day it's this and another day it is something really completely different in meaning that comes inside. Thank you, Patrick. Yes.
For me, it's thinking about beginner's mind with practice. I started practicing when I was 19, and it's hard for me to recollect having a beginner's mind. Mm-hmm. It's not something I can look back and think and have a clear memory of beginner's mind. For me, I have to look. Maybe I never had beginner's mind with practice because it was older. For me, I have to look way back when I was young child. And it's not so much centered around practice, it's more of a, I'm not sure what Suzuki Roshi means by possibilities, but for me it's more of a feeling of remembering when I was a kid and anything almost, but the small things, going outside, maybe some place I hadn't been, and it feeling magical. And feeling a little bit more alive, or smells, that were familiar or not familiar. Just my daily experience was full of a little bit more imagination and magic. And I think that maybe that was present in the beginning of practice, but that it didn't last for very long because I had lost that before I came to practice almost, in general with my life. For me, it's more getting back to where there, I guess magical is the fact that there are possibilities that aren't even in my consciousness or in my perception of reality. Being able to go outside and see a castle, where I can make a fort and play, and all these different possibilities within a situation that I might look at now and see, not even notice that it's there. Possibilities not necessarily to get anything done, but just possibilities to be open with whatever's in front of me, and have some magic or some mystery, or be able to make something up and not feel bad about making something up. So for me, I have to reach way, way back to find that. And I think what Patrick was saying with I feel a little bit of that with chanting in Japanese because it's so foreign that I feel a little bit of has a little bit of magic for me that I'm not, something that I don't know necessarily. I don't know if magic's the right way to say it.
Like a magic spell.
Yeah. It can be a little bit more playful, or you don't exactly know what intention you're putting out there. Don't exactly know what you're saying. And for me, that it reminds me of growing up in a very Christian environment. In the Bible, it says that somewhere Jesus says in the New Testament, you should go back to being, until you go back to being as a young child, then you can enter the kingdom of heaven. I think that kind of is similar to beginner's mind. That's what makes me look to when I was young. I think it's been a very long time since I've had that feeling of magic, I think it's kind of replaced by a feeling of kind of boredom. And I think when I look at things like that, I'm just completely cut off from the actual magic that maybe is still there, the possibilities that, that I don't even, maybe if I recognize that I, have learned to shut out, you know.
Yeah. Thank you. When you said, you know, go outside and build a castle or build a fort, there is that way in which, as a kid, when you step outside and you see the world, it's so different than when you're an adult.
It's not just a tree. It's a, you know,
it's a whole structure.
Whatever you need it to be, whatever, you know, your imagination.
Yeah. It's a house. It's a spaceship. Yeah. It's, you could put a piece of board here and have sodas up there. Or,
yeah, and I think the older I get, the more I think that those aren't actual possibilities, and maybe they're just as valid as, you know, practical possibilities. But I definitely feel cut off from that, and I feel sad about that.
As adults, we go to the, well, you should pull the weeds around the tree, and the tree's going to need pruning, and, you know, this month or that month, or it needs water, or...
Or I've seen one, I've seen them all. You know, I don't even look at individual trees.
Right. We forget.
Yeah.
We forget. Thank you.
Yeah, do you remember about a year ago you gave a lecture? You're talking about sadness, but you said you would go out and you start building something.
Yeah.
And you didn't even know what you were building.
Yeah.
Is that your attempt at trying to get to the
beginner's mind? I think so. And for those of you who weren't here, I wasn't building a small thing. I was like digging 3-foot holes and dropping posts and kind of a weird way to do a work in progress, but yeah. As you were talking today, just now, I was thinking, once a week, I take care of a friend's little child. She's one. She really likes to go in and out of my dog's crate. And I don't tell her mom this, because her mom's kind of like a germ freak. So anyway, the little kid likes to go in the crate and out of the crate and then close the door and then open the door. So I decided I would show her how to lock the door today. She started screaming right away, because, you know, that wasn't what she wanted to do. She just wanted to open the door, go in and out, and then take the toys in, the dog toys in, and then take them out. And she must have done that for about 25 minutes. And so I just sat down and watched her, and I realized her whole world was just the... maybe a kind of amazement. Well, you must know this as a parent, right? That it was just this discovery that she could do that and be in the crate, be out of the crate. I need to take a picture of her in the crate and send it to her mom. I totally flip her out. But it seemed like such a silly thing to do. I was like, shouldn't we go outside and swing on the swings? But no, she wanted to walk in and out of the dog crate. And the dog just stood off to the side and watched. But it was magic for her. And because it was magic for her, it was magic for me. After I finally said, oh, forget the swings. This is obviously a lot more fun. More time, huh? Let us all go build forts outside. Thank you.
Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to end them.
Buddha's way is unsurpassable.